From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
And it's Friday. Welcome to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. It's happy Friday, friendly Friday. You're sitting in with friendly folks here today on Washington Watch. This is where you're going to get news that you're not getting in any other place, news from a perspective that matters to you and it matters to us. And the top of the show right now is Iran is conducting a significant naval exercise off the Strait of Hormuz. And Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says North Korea has a ways to go to denuclearization. FRC's retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin will be here in just a moment with his thoughts. And on Wednesday, faith leaders from America's inner cities gathered at the White House for a meeting with President Trump. We'll talk with evangelist and Dr. Alveda King. She was at the meeting. We'll get her thoughts on that roundtable. And folks, in one of the more troubling topics I've covered in my lifetime, and I have been at this for over 40 years, a recent TED Talks medical student, Mirjam Heine, put forth the belief that pedophilia, hold on, you may need to pull over for this, that pedophilia is a natural, unchangeable sexual orientation. Lord help us, where have we come? Dr. Linda Mental, chair of the Division of Behavioral Health at Liberty University, will be here to not only challenge but debunk this dangerous notion. And yes, of course, we'll take your calls towards the end of the show. And hey, have you got your Stand Firm app yet? Make sure you go to TonyPerkins.com. You can learn all about it, and you can follow Tony on Twitter at TPerkins, and you can follow me at RJonesReports. Well, U.S. officials believe Iran is preparing to carry out a major exercise in the Gulf in the coming days, apparently moving up the timing of annual drills amid heightened tensions with Washington. And Iran recently threatened to block the strait, which is a key passageway for Middle East oil tankers going from the Persian Gulf to the Arabian Sea. And Secretary Pompeo, he says North Korea is far from being nuclear free. Well, with us now is retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. He was the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence during the George W. Bush administration, an original member of the Army's Delta Force, and currently serves as FRC's Executive Vice President. General, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, and TGIF.
TGIF. Are you ready for it? I tell you, all this news, I mean, it's enough to wear you out.
It is.
Tell us first, let's take a look at Iran. And one of the things folks may not really be in tune with is explain the importance here, the Strait of Hormuz. So it's the world's most important oil transit choke point.
Yeah, that's right. I think it's about a 25-mile wide gap between the coast of Yemen and Iran and the coast of what we call the Persian Gulf region, which is UAE, Qatar, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia, Oman. And the oil comes out of the Persian Gulf down through that on these super tankers. And Iran has been threatening for decades to shut the Straits of Hormuz. Number one, if the Israelis were to attack them or try to preempt their nuclear program like they did the Iraqi nuclear program in 1981. They've been threatening to do this. And they have, remember, under the Obama administration, when we had ships up in that area, they would come out with these small boats and circle our ships and say all kinds of weird stuff over their loudspeakers and all, just challenging our people. And, of course, under Obama, we never did anything. But they've been threatening to do this. Here's the reality, Russ. They could only shut the Straits of Hormuz for a limited period of time because we have been in coalition naval exercise there for the last 3 years to do just what we would have to do, which is reopen the straits. That's not the problem. We can reopen it and demine it if they drop mines in there. Problem is the insurance on tankers is going to go up tremendously, which is going to jack up world oil prices. So this is a threat to be taken seriously just for that reason, if nothing else.
In general, we're learning that unidentified U.S. officials are saying that Iran so far has assembled a fleet of more than 100 vessels for these exercises. And, you know, General, since I have been in the Mississippi State Guard, I've been in officer training and all of this. You've been there, done that. You've got multiple T-shirts. This has become hugely more important to me and interesting to me from a strategic point of view, and what you're saying, you know, about that strait. And it also helps me understand more. Our president is wanting us to be more control of our own natural resources, so we're not depending on nations that really, quite frankly, don't have our best interest in mind. Isn't that right?
That's exactly right. And we could become energy independent probably in about 18 months. Just totally energy independent. The problem is that we've had such restrictions on us under the last administration for 8 years, you know, that we've ceded really our independence to countries like Saudi Arabia. It is important to remember that America probably, I think the experts will tell you, America has more oil and gas than the Persian Gulf does. The issue is whether we're willing to get it out of the ground and get it to where the consumer can use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these, you know, these tensions between Iran and the U.S., well, they've been rising, haven't they, since, what, May, when President Trump announced he was withdrawing from the nuclear deal signed by Tehran. Isn't that really where this is going back to?
It is, and he was very clear in his when he was campaigning that he would withdraw from the Iran treaty. And even people in his own administration tried to get him to change his mind. But what if you take an objective look at that, and you look at what some of the people that really know what they're talking about have said about that, that put Iran on a pathway to a nuclear weapon, and America did absolutely nothing except the victory lap that the Obama administration took over that so-called deal. That was an abysmal deal that guaranteed that Iran would have a nuclear weapon in a decade and that Israel was going to be under threat.
Well, let's talk about North Korea. Secretary Pompeo recently said, they're not there yet, got a ways to go. What say you?
Yeah, well, they do have a ways to go. And I think there's three possibilities as to why we're seeing Kim do what he's doing. One is that he's trying to clandestinely hold on to some residual capabilities so he'll still have a nuclear program even after he declares that he's disarmed. Number two is that he is building his arsenal so that he's got more to barter with, more to trade away. And the third one is that the Chinese have gotten involved in this thing because of the sanctions or the tariffs that the president has placed on them. And this is sort of them saying, hey, we still control the rocket man. And I think the Chinese are probably in some way at least to some extent involved and responsible for what we're seeing there now.
And, you know, it doesn't take much for the left and the mainstream media to latch on to a comment like that. But all we have to do is look back a year ago to see where we were.
That's exactly right. I mean, we were still in the throes of the little rocket man. We were still in the throes of the left claiming that Mr. Trump was taking us into a nuclear war. Millions of people were going to die, and the world is coming to an end, and now look at where we are. So we just got 53 MIAs from the Korean War home yesterday. We've got no nuclear warhead tests and no missile tests since the meeting in Singapore. And I think that there is progress being made, and I think it's a long, iterative process. I don't know where it will wind up, but what I can say is that Trump hasn't given any ground at this point.
And you mentioned the remains coming back. Take off your general badge just for a moment and describe what it was like to see those remains come off the plane and a set of dog tags. You know, they call the North Korean conflict, the war, kind of the unforgotten war. There may be folks listening here, maybe a little education time on this, but what did it mean for you to see that? What's it mean for America?
Yeah, first of all, it is called the Forgotten War, and that is because that was the first war that America came out of where we didn't have a solid victory. We didn't have a you know, a treaty signed that, you know, said the other side capitulated. So it's a forgotten war in that context. I was so proud to see those coffins coming off that. Well, I tell you, as an American, I was so proud. As a retired military guy, I must tell you that it was emotional for me because there is an ethos. And people talk about it, and they're right, but I don't think they really understand it. But the ethos in our military, the ethos by our nation, is it will never leave a person behind. Now, there's still 7,000 people over there that are unaccounted for, but we've been working it ever since the Korean War ended. And we've still got some in Southeast Asia and Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia, and we're still working those. We have a whole command that just does that. I was so proud, Russ, to see those coffins come off and saying to every American, look, this is what America's about. You don't stand for a flag. And those bodies are draped in that flag, and you're not willing to stand for it. Shame on all of you who do that.
You know, General, in January, I put on that guard uniform for the first time, and you'll know what I'm talking about. I look forward to every opportunity I have to put on that uniform.
And you should just be. You should look forward to it, Russ. You should be proud to wear that uniform.
And I just got to put a certification on that uniform for emergency management expertise. And I am in these books on the web every day in officer training and taking advantage at 58 years old. 58 years old, General.
Yeah, you are indeed an old man. Your body parts don't even work. I bet both knees are needing to be replaced.
They wanted me for my brain, though.
Yeah.
But even with this limited experience, I don't have your years of experience, but it has brought new appreciation. And I get worried about our culture today, our younger generation, who has their heads in the iPhones and the technology all the time and protesting on the streets, is who's going to put on the uniform and protect America. And I'm grateful for those that are doing that.
Well, what's worse is they don't know history. They don't know American history. They don't know, generally speaking, who our founding fathers were and what they were intending to do, what they really were trying to accomplish in creating this new nation. And that's a sad thing. So when you don't know where you came from, you lose the past. There's an old proverb that says if you forget about the past, or if you dwell on the past, you lose an eye. Mm-hmm. If you forget about the past, you lose both eyes. And stop and think about it. We're forgetting about the past as a nation.
Well, I'm glad you got your eye on the ball, and I appreciate you being with us here on this Friday. You have a blessed weekend, General.
Okay, good being with you. God bless you.
God bless you, too. I love that man. Learned a lot from him since I have been here on Washington Watch. Well, coming up next, President Trump focused on efforts to reform the prison system on Wednesday, meeting with faith leaders and lawmakers at the White House. When we return, we'll talk with evangelist Alveda King, the niece of Martin Luther King. She was at the meeting. You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Make sure you go to TonyPerkins.com. You can get all of this great content. You can follow Tony on Twitter at T Perkins. You can follow me at R Jones Reports.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage. And this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, civil liberties attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, senior research fellow in the technology policy program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
To be honest, this is probably going to be the, and I'm saying this at this table, the most pro-black president that we've had in our lifetime, because, and I try to, you know, analyze the people that I encounter, this president actually wants to prove something to our community, our faith-based community and our ethnic community. The last president didn't feel like he had to. This administration is probably going to be more proactive regarding urban revitalization and prison reform than any president in your lifetime. If we work together, give him a chance, we will do something. This administration will continue to make history.
And you've tuned in to Washington Watch, powered by the Family Research Council. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. That was Pastor Daryl Scott talking and praising President Trump. He's co-founder and pastor of New Spirit Revival Center in Cleveland Heights, Ohio. And on Wednesday, President Trump met with inner city pastors from around the nation to discuss his administration's efforts at changing the prison system and other criminal justice issues, including prisoner reentry, rehabilitation, and workforce training programs. Well, joining us now is evangelist Alveda King. She was at the meeting. Actually, she was sitting right to the left of President Trump, director of civil rights for the unborn, the African-American outreach of Priests for Life, and niece of Dr. Martin Luther King. Alveda, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, hello, Russ. Hello to all your listeners. It's just wonderful to greet everybody and thanks and say hello to Tony and the family.
I sure will. You know, I was watching that video, and you know what I noticed? Pastor Scott was talking, President Trump reached his left hand over and tapped your arm when he was talking about being so friendly to the black community, important to the black community, because you were nodding your head, and I know you could have said the same things. But tell us about that meeting.
I can. And I, you know, when President Trump first said he was candidate Trump, and he did something that I've, at 67 years of age, and I've been engaged in several of the presidential administrations because of my civil rights work, my family, and things through the years, I have never heard a candidate straight out say, black people, I want you to vote for me. And President Trump actually said that. Now, then he said, what do you have to lose? And so all of the African Americans, because we have gone through a lot of pain and suffering, well, what do we have to lose? What do you mean? And I said, well, President Trump, no, candidate Trump, tell us what we have to gain. And even as early during his candidacy, he began to talk about making America great again and what that would look like for everybody. And then he said, we all bleed the same, you know? So I think
I've heard somebody else say that.
Well, you know, but one blood, Acts 17:26, you really heard me say it a lot of times. So I think we were remembering those moments as Pastor Darrell spoke the truth. Because what other candidate? Look, everybody research. You've got your computers and things. See, if another candidate ever said, black people for president, said, black people, I want your vote. Yeah, he did.
Now, you know, you got to be around that table, and what were you hearing about prison reform and rehabilitation and those sorts of things?
You had the men and women of best practices at that table. And as you heard each person speak about his or her ministry platform and all of that, and even me as an evangelist, I'm not a pastor, I'm an evangelist, but I was ordained as a home cell pastor by my pastor, Alan McNair, before he passed away, and I have pastored a small flock. But in listening to all of us, who many of us at that table have been into the prisons and ministered to the captives, Jesus came to set the captives free, and you felt all of that compassion, all of that energy in that room. I bet you everyone is touched by prison ministry and reentry. Everybody at the table was. And so to hear the various perspectives, the best practices, because the meeting did not end with the video that the public has seen. At the end, after the media left the room, there was some in-depth information and opportunities to continue and do more. All of that did come at the meeting.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, I just never cease to be amazed, Alveda, when I see folks that may or may not fit into particular mold. It's like there's an element of our society that says, oh, you can't think this way, you can't believe this way, you have to do this. Well, I believe his name was Pastor Gray. I mean, did I read right that he got called out
terribly? And he said his wife told him, if you go, everything that you are won't be heard and nobody will hear your heart. And he says, good woman, she told the truth. And then others said, don't go. And he prayed because he thought about it. If it was just his decision, he probably would not have gone. But he prayed. He actually prayed twice. God, do I need to be there? And Pastor Gray said he believed God told him to come. So he came.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, do you see others in the black community that are kind of taking a second look and saying, hey, you know, my life is better. You know, this man does care about all people and their families and how they're living.
People are understanding that. And I've had calls today, emails, texts, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn. I'm hearing from people from all over America, regardless of skin color. You know, skin color does not define us. It's our character. It's our heart. You've heard that from the King family legacy with our most famous member, Martin Luther King Jr., for years. And President Trump gets that. And then he says, you know, he says all Americans need a job. He doesn't just make big emphasis on what color you are, whether you've been in prison or not, and all of that. He says we all need to participate together. And I've seen that. I'm seeing that. I saw that in that meeting. I was very encouraged. It was primarily African-American pastors, but we had someone from the Caucasian community, from the Hispanic community. We had women and men in the meeting. It was just very encouraging.
Well, Alveda, I knew you would bring us the goods, and I appreciate you taking time out of your Friday to be with us on Washington. God bless you. Thank you so much for the update.
Check me out at civilrightsfortheunborn.com.
We will. Thank you so much. CivilRightsForTheUnborn.com. Dr. Alveda King, Evangelist Alveda King. She is an evangelist at heart. Well, coming up next, a medical student says pedophilia is a natural, unchangeable sexual orientation. Dr. Lyndall Mental, Chair, Division of Behavioral Health at Liberty University and noted author on mental health issues. She's going to be here in just a moment. Folks, you're not going to want to miss this conversation because it reflects the concerns and challenges of our culture and where we're at. I'm Russ Jones. This is Washington Watch.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Well, this is the Friday edition of Washington Watch. I'm Russ Jones, sitting in for Tony Perkins. Good lineup today. Good topics, good information that's coming your way, but we always kind of do this download of information that you don't hear in a lot of other places, and this is one of those stories. Maybe you saw it trending on the internet. It's one of those stories I don't really want to tell you, but I need to tell you and share with you. We need to talk about it because it's reflective of a much larger problem. Well, on May 5th, a medical student Meir Jamhaini, spoke at an independently organized TED Talk. If you don't know what TED Talks are, TED Talks is a platform where different speakers and authors and whatnot share their theories and ideologies. And you can see them on YouTube. But this event at the University of Würzburg in Germany, well, in the description of the event, the TED Talk website explained that Heine would focus on her belief that pedophilia is a natural, unchangeable sexual orientation. Let's listen.
Most of us feel discomfort when we think about pedophiles. But just like pedophiles, we are not responsible for our feelings. We do not choose them. But we are responsible for our actions. And we must make a decision. It is in our responsibility to reflect and to overcome our negative feelings about pedophiles and to treat them with the same respect we treat other people with. We should accept that pedophiles are people who have not chosen their sexuality and who, unlike most of us, will never be able to live it out freely if they want to lead an upright life. We should accept that pedophilia is a sexual preference.
Could hardly even listen to that. Well, with us now is Dr. Linda Mintel. She's the chair, Division of Behavioral Health at Liberty University in Lynchburg, Virginia, and noted author and mental health expert. Doctor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, it's good to be with you, Russ. Thanks for having me.
Well, before we get into this, you're out there with lots of water. How are you doing? How is your community with that threat of the breach of that dam?
Yeah, I don't know what's happening right now. I'm looking out my window at the medical school, and it's raining very hard again. And so I don't think this is helping the matter. So we're just praying that it's not going to put too much more pressure on that and that we won't have another incident. But it was really quite harrowing. I've been in a lot of bad storms in my life, but driving home from work yesterday was pretty intense. And we got 6 inches in 1 hour. So if you can imagine that.
Oh, my goodness.
That's
wow.
Pretty intense. Yeah, and it's raining again. So.
Yeah. Well, you'll certainly be in our thoughts and prayers. And thank you so much for taking time to come on the program. Give us just your guttural reaction to this, and then we'll get into the, the more academic. But just when you saw this as a professional, just take us inside your heart and your mind.
Well, it's interesting because I teach medical students, and I teach medical students on the whole in the whole area of what's called pedophilia and pedophilic disorders, and it's a part of what is called the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, which is a manual that's used by clinicians and researchers all over the world to diagnose and classify mental disorders. And so this is put out by the American Psychiatric Association. It was the latest version was published in 2013 after they did a 14-year revision process. So what's interesting is that pedophilia is pedophilic disorder, it's called, people who struggle with deviant patterns of sexual interests, fantasies, and behaviors. They have distress to themselves, or they produce harm to each other, to other people. This is one of the disorders, paraphilic disorders, and it's in the DSM-5, so it's in there as a mental disorder. So when I heard her talk, I thought, I don't know what she's saying, because she's going against the very training that we do with medical students to help them understand when somebody is dealing with what we would call deviant or aberrant or abnormal sexual behavior that we know, and it's in the manual, that has been typically there is some kind of cause in early childhood, early trauma, that interferes with the normal sexual development. This is right in the manual. And a pattern of arousal that's replaced by another pattern based on the history of that child. And it turns into and what we would call something away from the norm. So when she says you're just born with this and this is, something that is just the way they're going to live out their life, I'm thinking, what manual are you reading? Because this is not what's in the current DSM-5. So...
And she's a medical student. That's
right.
Just
in Germany. In Germany. Yeah. So maybe they go with a different classification system. But certainly in America, the way we train students to recognize sexual dysfunction and sexual disorders, this is one of them that is definitely in their diagnostic manual and is clearly delineated with some understanding of the cause of this as well.
And, it's interesting, even for the LGBTQ community, this is, gone too far. They're saying, hey, you can't equate this behavior with transgenderism and with lifestyles within the LGBT community. But isn't this just a natural outgrowth, though, in many ways, when you start saying, you can be whatever, you can identify with whomever you want to be?
I think it's a lot different when you're talking about children, and
yes.
it's really interesting when the LGBTQ community, to their credit, they are not in that diagnostic manual that I'm talking about. So they are not a part of that. So they are not listed under a mental disorder, but this disorder clearly is.
Hey, and Dr. Mendel, we're up against a hard break. Would you hold on and come back with us after the break? That'd be great. We're talking with Dr. Linda Mendel. She's Liberty University. Very glad to have her on here. You're listening to Washington Watch, and I'm sitting in for Tony Perkins. We're discussing this TEDx talk. Don't go away.
You've seen the news. Christian cake bakers and florists were targeted by LGBT activists for their beliefs about marriage and forced out of business. The Christian adoption providers are also being targeted for believing that children deserve a mother and a father to raise them. In 3 states and 2 large cities, faith-based adoption providers have been forced out of providing needy children with stable homes because of their beliefs about marriage, and this trend shows no signs of stopping. With the adoption rate in the United States steadily dropping for the last 17 years, discriminating against faith-based adoption providers will only make the problem worse by forcing agencies who serve children in need of loving families out of the marketplace. This is why laws are needed to protect these agencies at the federal and state level. For more information on this important issue, visit frc.org/adoption.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. Now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on September 21st through 23rd in Washington, D.C., and join hundreds of Americans who, like you, want a culture in which human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Invited and confirmed speakers at this conference include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Paul Ryan, Laura Ingraham, Diamond and Silk, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, Ben Carson, Sean Hannity, and Mark Levin. On September 21st through 23rd, stand with Values Voters to keep the momentum going. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Hello? Can you hear me? Are we losing our voice? 69% of American adults are using social media platforms to express themselves. But digital giants like Facebook, Google, and Twitter have collided with the free speech rights of citizen internet users. In the wake of a consistent pattern of censorship by tech companies of lawful but politically incorrect viewpoints, particularly those of conservatives and Christians, what is the legal status of digital free expression? Family Research Council hosted an expert panel discussion on the question of losing our voices. Who owns free speech on the internet? The panel speakers were Congressman Marsha Blackburn, Civil Liberties Attorney Craig Parshall, and Brent Scorum, Senior Research Fellow in the Technology Policy Program at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University. To watch this discussion on one of the most important freedom of expression issues in decades, go to frc.org/voice. Again, that's frc.org/voice.
Great content at TonyPerkins.com, and make sure to go download the Stand Firm app. It will really keep you connected. Well, we've been talking with Dr. Linda Mental. She's the chair, Division of Behavioral Health at Liberty University, and really glad to have you on the program. Dr. Mental, welcome back. Thanks for holding on.
Thanks.
Help our listeners kind of get a grasp on this and where to go with it in their brains, because this, frankly, is one of those issues and topics that just is so far over the top, we can't even kind of get our mind around it. And some talking points that folks could use.
So I think when you were asking me what was my reaction to that TED Talk, I think one of the most disturbing things about it for me was that, you know, you cannot continue to present identity politics as science. And this is not science. This is not based on scientific evidence. It's not based on the scientific manuals that we use. It's not based on what we're doing. So that's a little concerning. But what maybe listeners need to know is there has been for a number of years a very small group of psychiatrists and mental health professionals who are advocating these kind of changes. They feel like people, adults who have sexual attractions to children should be allowed to have sexual relationships with children. They think that children can give informed consent, and they've been pushing that agenda. It's a small group. It's not something that you hear a lot about, but it is a group that exists. And honestly, in this day and age, I mean, that is considered sexual abuse if you were to give in and to actually have sex with a child. So in our country, this is still considered child abuse. It's sexual abuse. It's a crime. It gets prosecuted as such. So no matter what a person feels, no matter what a person thinks, they cannot act on those urges or those fantasies with a child in our country. But because there is this small group who keeps pushing this idea that somehow kids can give informed consent about sexuality, which is ludicrous given the child development that we know about and how kids develop and how sexuality is something that develops over time and it's influenced by a lot of factors, and there's just so much there that's wrong about that assumption. So we have to be aware of this, and when we hear it, we need to really call people out. And I hope that our country will stand firm with the idea that, you know, children should not be abused in this way and used this way, and that we need to continue to see this as a psychiatric disorder and treat it as such.
And that really is right in the middle of the bullseye, because we've covered these issues on the show before, mm-hmm. about children and students giving consent and academic institutions, you know, claiming that parents don't need to sign off on certain sex ed education and curriculums and whatnot. So, and this is all within that same bundle, isn't it?
Well, it could be. And again, I just say, let's follow back to the research. Let's look at what we can, when we do studies, what does it show? Are these really the kinds of things that are really being borne out, or is it a narrative that's being promoted in the culture? And to me, I want to stay on the side of science. I don't worry about what science is going to show us, because I believe that, you know, as a believer, that we're all, designed by the image of God, and that He created a certain way to make us flourish. And as a result of that, science is only going to bear out what makes us flourish, what brings us happiness, what creates well-being. And so I don't get concerned when people say, let's study this. In fact, I'm hoping we do. And I guess that's what's so concerning to me, Russ, is that you have so much of this just, I guess, what you all call identity politics. I try to stay out of the political realm, because I just want to, I know what works for kids, what works for adults from a mental health standpoint, how to help people body, mind, spirit, you know, what is working. And when I hear somebody like this, and it isn't even backed up by any kind of science, it's just opinions. It concerns me that that's put out as if it's some type of scientific, you know, conclusion just because she's a medical student. So we need to be very careful. We need to look at the studies when people come out and they say things. Look at the studies. Get someone who understands how to read studies and say, is this really a well-designed study? Is this really something that, was done correctly? And a lot of times these studies where they make claims are not really done in a good methodology. So we need people overseeing that, looking at that, and continuing to say, what are we actually discovering when we do science?
Right. Well, Dr. Mindell, thank you so much for joining us on Washington Watch. We'll have to have you back. Very, very enlightening. I appreciate your work there. And please be safe there in Lynchburg.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Take care. Thank you. Thank you. That's Dr. Linda Mindell, first-time guest here on Washington Watch. And I think you would agree, very articulate on these issues. Well, hey, it's open phone line time. We need to open up the phone lines. Love to hear from you. 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. We've got all kinds of things to talk about. We got to hear from Dr. Alveda King about President Trump and his embrace of the Black community, and Dr. Mindell here. Let's not focus on all the negative, though. It's, Tony does Thoughtful Thursday. I kind of like to do Friendly Friday. What kind of friendly things have happened in your life, in anything you're doing in your community? And Tony is going to be off all next week. So guess what? You're going to have to put up with me all next week. So if you got any story ideas and things like that, let me know. You know, send me a note. You can go to TonyPerkins.com. Love to get your thoughts, what's going on. We like to tell good news stories as well. And it's an opportunity for us to put a spotlight on what's going on and the victories happening in our culture. So this is one of those opportunities for me that I'm looking forward to, and honored to have the radio platform to be with you. So let's go to Pete in South Carolina. Hi, Pete. Welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Russ. Thank you. And great job of the show. Love the program. And going back to General Boykin, what a great guy. I have an organization called Teach Our Christian Heritage. And it is the mission of this organization that our government, our quote-unquote schools, need to teach American history every year, K through 12, in any school after that that accepts money from the taxpayers, and that our Christian story needs to be a major part and focus, a central part of teaching American history, and that needs to be done every year and needs to be done properly and reverently for this country. And if you want to take half a year, some year, and teach the history of that particular state, great. If you want to take half a year, some years, and teach world history, great. But American history, at least half a year, every year. And we need to teach the Christian story of this country, and it can be done so easily through the wording of our documents, from the Mayflower Compact for God and King, to the Declaration of Independence, to the Charter of Privileges, and then also from quotes from what our founding fathers said in their letters and addresses. But it's very important, and quotes should be taught in schools.
Thank you, Pete, from South Carolina. Appreciate you calling. Man, our phone lines are blowing up on me here. I think we've just lost touch of our history. We're not teaching it very well, and students aren't engaging, and maybe we need to find ways to make it more interesting, more engaging. Let's go to Oklahoma and talk with David. Hi, David. Welcome to the show.
Yes, thank you. I just wanted to say that the gay community would often like to distance themselves from pedophilia. But if you're a man and you're gay, and if you're a woman and you enjoy sex with girls of any age, you're gay. And there's no dividing line. But I'd also like to say that, we got to be willing to, or we got to be ready to meet these people, for those who are looking for help. Not flinch or not blink an eye when they come to us and say, I have this problem. We have to, right now I'm sure it's a big deal if somebody were to come to us in church. We have to be willing to meet them where they're at. And that was all. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, David. And David makes a good point. We do have to be ready to meet folks. And are we ready to really meet people in the trenches, in the mud? Because the gospel's dirty. I mean, restoration, redemption, it's... I've been through a season in my life years ago that was difficult, painful. And sometimes the church was there and sometimes it wasn't. And thankfully, good Christian friends that walked with me. Let's go to Joe in Ohio. Hi, Joe.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'd just like to remind the Christian conservatives to stay diligent. We got a big primary in Ohio, special election. The liberals have spent millions of dollars in attack campaign ads against Troy Balderson. We need the Christian conservatives to come out and support him. President Trump's coming into town tomorrow night to get the base rallied up. They've got key primaries in Michigan, Missouri, and three other states. I don't have the list in front of me, but I just urge the Christian conservatives to get out and vote in the primaries and support the – there's a lot of good pro-life candidates out there. And don't sit back and complain and let the liberals outwork you and outspend you. Get out and get involved. Yeah. We're volunteering for Troy Balderson here in Central Ohio. If any Christians in Central Ohio, we could use their help. Trump rally is tomorrow in Lewis Center, and we hope to see all the Christian conservatives there supporting the pro-life, pro-gun, lower taxes, border security candidate, and Troy Balderson. Thanks for all you do.
All right. Thanks, Joe. Thank you so much. Let's go to Karen. Hey, Karen, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, that gentleman said a lot of what I was going to say, but in Kansas, our primary is August the 7th, next week. I was very upset to hear that student in Germany talking about pedophiles. I wonder, where's she coming from personally? I can't imagine what her situation is and why she would be promoting that. We have had so much on our issues here on this election regarding gay versus not gay, and it's really been bad.
Right. Well, very good points, and we do need to be praying for these elections just for the process and that folks get out and vote, and that's absolutely for sure. And it's disheartening, Karen, sometimes, but we know the God's got this. He's not up in heaven wringing his hands. He's got this. Karen, thank you so much for calling. Let's go to Seth. Hey, Seth, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I'm a third-year medical student here in the United States, and I was just going to comment on the good doctor's opinion. talking about the medical student over in Germany who supports right. pedophilia as a national state. And one of the things that the good doctor said that I just loved is that it has to be backed up by the studies. It has to be what we call in medicine evidence-based medicine. So mm-hmm. you have studies that you know prove support what you're doing, and that's what forms the basis of good interventions, good medicine. Now, the only other thing I was going to say is the DSM-5 that the doctor was talking about. It's certainly the diagnostic guideline for what all of the behavioral specialists and medical professionals are using to diagnose behaviors of or disorders of behavior. Now, the DSM isn't perfect. It's constantly going through revisions, as the doctor was saying, and certainly I do not expect to see any changes taking pedophilia off the DSM-5, but it certainly, if we stick to what the DSM-5 says right now, is this current edition, we still have progress that needs to be made in various fields of psychiatric medicine. So certainly the gold standard, but improvements can be done.
Seth, where are you going to school?
Yeah, so I'm a third-year medical student at Michigan State.
Well, good for you. Good for you, and we need good doctors out there and appreciate your hard work there. God bless you, Seth. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Indiana. Vershawn. Hey, Vershawn, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a comment about the race relationship here in my town, Terre Haute there. You know, I'm a postman, and recently been working there in January, and I've been delivering mail, and a lot of comments from fellow African-Americans just surprised about me being a postman, and, you know, just correlating and just surprising, you know, because 2018, and, you know.
Get out of here. Get out of here. People are surprised that you as an African-American man are delivering the mail and working for the Postal Service?
Yes, and it's like crazy because, I mean, literally people are stopping in the busy road like, where are you from? And I'm like, what, did segregation just end? Or like, it's just it's mind-boggling.
See, anyways, listen, Vershawn, that kind of story it just hurts my heart. I grew up in Kansas City. I went to a big urban school in the middle of Kansas City. You know, we went through the race riots. We went through all of that. Graduated in 1978, but we learned how to do it. You know, we learned how to do the dance. We learned how to get along, and I just get outraged when I hear. I mean, we're putting people in these boxes, and if you're this skin color over here, you got to be over here, and if you're this skin color over here, you got to be over here. You got to be a Democrat. You got to be a Republican, I just apply. We just got to gently call that kind of stuff out.
Yes, for sure, man. It's just like I said, mind-boggling. Can't believe the comments. I mean, that's the number one comment I get, and you know, my professor, you know, is a Caucasian, and he's trying to work with other African American pastors in my city, and you know, talk about bringing the churches together for the sake of Christ, and the pastors are very like anti-Democrat, and you know, I mean, anti-Republican and anti-Trump, and it's just they're spilling out this untruthful stuff, you know. And I just
Vershawn, God bless you. We're out of time, but you've got the opportunity to pray over every household and every piece of mail you deliver. I've got to go. I hope you call back. I love you, brother. What a great call. You've been listening to Washington Watch. And friends, I leave you with this from Isaiah 40. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles, and they run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. If the waters don't rise and the Lord tarries, I'll see you again on Monday. God bless.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.